How Long Gone. It's your boy, Chris Black, my final night here in Berlin, and I've actually turned a corner on it, Jason.
Hello. This is huge. I feel like you've been... I was writing the episode description for yesterday's pod, and I was like, we didn't even discuss where Chris was. So in the intro, where I'm like, Chris is in New York, Jason is in Glendale, whatever, I was just like, Chris is in Europe? Like, I was like, I don't know where you are, because at this point, it's just like you kind of live there. But we haven't talked about it, which is weird. So, like, I don't want this bubble to burst.
I understand. No, I understand. I'm ready to go home. I go home tomorrow morning.
So you are sort of on record. I've never been to Berlin, but many people have said I will like it there because it is cheap. You can get around on bicycles, and drugs and alcohol and bad techno music are abound.
That is true, but I've unlocked a new side to the city thanks to some local friends.
It's called a circuit party, and I love it.
Now I met some new friends.
And they've welcomed me into their, they call it their den.
But today, Sven, who actually was on the show, he does that thing called the talks. He was on when their book came out.
Sven Schumann,
yeah. And he
Schumann.
He was like, you want to get lunch? And he gave me a healthy option. And then he was like, I'm also could take you to the China Club, which is in the same building as the hotel where Michael Jackson dangled the baby over the ledge. And I was like,
I like,
okay,
that's the most Chris Black tempting thing. Like, because like, if someone's like, do you want to go to this restaurant for lunch? The food is good, and you're like, Michael Jackson dangled a baby off of it, and your mouth starts watering, you start sharpening your silverware, putting a paper napkin into your shirt.
But it's called the China Club, and it's the biggest and best collection of Chinese art outside of China, the country. So it's like this super ornate.
Say where? Damn, it's like pho restaurants in Garden Grove.
Exactly the same. But like, just like the most insane ornate dining room. There was a smoking lounge indoors, which is like unheard of in Germany, but because it's private. And then the food was delicious, like really, really good. Had some dim sum, had some aubergine, and it was A plus. But I wanted to talk to you about a dessert I had, a rare lunch dessert, because Sven was
okay. Well, just to really quick, you are able to finally enjoy the city of Berlin, Germany, because you went to an old Chinese restaurant.
Well, it's not a restaurant. First of all, it's a club. It has multiple restaurants, but I also my buddy set me up at a great hotel called the Chateau Royal, and I went to some other restaurants and saw Jorg.
It's a group effort.
It's a group effort by well-to-do guys exactly our age, which is what I need to be around. You know what I mean?
His sniffy's profile.
But this dessert was a mango soup with a scoop of vanilla ice cream floating in it. And it had... not tapioca, but something else, like little balls for texture.
Was it de boba?
It wasn't de boba. It was
okay, so,
it was
a chilled mango soup. Obviously the German people known for their mango. So a chilled German soup with vanilla ice cream floater.
Yes.
And boba balls.
It was delicious. Delicious. Okay. And I was surprised because I was skeptical, but he was like, this is the thing you got to get.
Are you paying attention, stir crazy? This is going on the menu. So this is, I mean, I don't want to put on my food hat because we do have a food-ish guest on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was hoping it would stay in the walk-in until he came on, but I'm going to have to pull it out. You know, is this or is this not a gazpacho?
Great question. I mean, honestly, I can't answer that. I can't answer a food question of that level with, you know, I don't have the answer. That's fine. It was delicious, and I was just so surprised, you know, that I, because it was A plus, and I, you know, I rarely allow myself a
how thick was the soup? And then we're going to move on.
Not super thick. It was honestly the perfect consistency. For all of the weird elements going on, it the consistency was A plus.
What could you describe or give me an example of what the consistency was similar to, other than it was perfect? Motor oil.
Like melted ice cream, almost. You know what I mean? Like a little thinner than that, but like, you know, kind of like that. So, yeah, I mean, look, I love having my eyes open.
What about the gym vibe?
Gym vibe. So the hotel has a relationship with a, like the Equinox of Berlin, I guess. And it's got a pool full every machine you could want. Full of ugly people with bad tattoos. It's perfect.
What is it? Does it is it called Equinox or does it have a different German name?
It's called. Hold on, I'm gonna look it up because I cannot remember the name of it.
It's okay.
Well,
I was hoping that it was gonna be a funny name, but
Holmes Place actually, which like Sherlock, but it's not. That's not funny. It's just weird.
Mm, okay. Yeah, it sounds like the address of where our guest lives. Probably. I live on 45 Holmes Place.
Holmes Muse, yeah, I live right down there. Yeah, the flat's right around the corner there. Yeah.
Well, speaking of where I live, let's talk about your girl Chloe Sevigny waxing poetically about why she hates Los Angeles. And a lot of people tag me and they're like, "Bro, this is your girl.
Yeah,
she's clowning you." Blah blah blah. I'm like, "Not." We all know, like, this is only making my penis harder. Obviously.
Yeah. First of all, she's right.
First of all, she's right. When is she wrong? And secondly, you know. This is me. If Los Angeles was a cuck chair, I'm sitting down and I'm listening and I'm learning. Berate my hometown. It's only going to get me harder. Call the cops. I'll fuck them too.
Those are all. This is all. These are all things I've said before about LA, and we own a home there. But I like it. But it's all of the stuff she said is true. And New York is superior. And I think most people would agree with that, unless they.
But she didn't say New York is superior though. She obviously maybe alluded to something like that.
That's the undertone. That's the undertone. As a lifelong as the eternal New York it girl, it's tough. But sure. Between the dog hating and now this, it's getting crazy. It's too good. Like, why hasn't she been talking for the last 20 years like this?
Well, because she hasn't had a TV show or film come out that was this bad and in need of promotion. So I guess she's really...
Is it that bad?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how well it's performing or being rated. I think everyone... Nobody wants to come out and say that the show is boring and it sucks because of,
I think people have said that, actually. I just didn't know if it was true or not.
Right. I mean, that's what DJ Them Jeans is saying. I don't have a letterbox.
Yeah, I don't really trust you. I don't really trust you when it comes to television, though.
You know you trust me. And it's not... This is film and television.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to limit your scope. I apologize. I
have a lot... I'm multidisciplinary in my screen time.
There's a lot of things I trust you on, and you are a great source of information, inspiration in the food space, the electronic music space, the ambient music space, dangerous driving space. I could go on.
But when it comes to film and television, this Yellowstone watcher has other words.
I mean, Yellowstone's better than any other show, so yeah, I do have other words. I mean, I can't. It's also, you know, Yellowstone.
You're like the same kind of person who's like, Taco Bell's better. Taco Bell's still better. It tastes bomb.
I would never.
And it's like with your pea brain, then maybe I could see how you like that. You know what I mean?
I would normally agree with you, and I do have a pea brain, but I think that the numbers, you know, the numbers speak for themselves to an extent. I'm not out on a limb here saying that Yellowstone's a great television show.
We're not discussing dick length. I'm talking girth. Does it please you?
Do not bring Drake up. Do not do that. Do not.
Well, you're using a classic Chris Black excuse, which is judging a piece of art on its sales versus its merit and artistic endeavor.
By that logic,
the worst, dumbest things in the world are the best just because they sell them.
The stuff you like, Dua Lipa, Ariana Grande,
the next time you do your little bitch ass fucking strategist GQ shit, then people are gonna be like, I don't know where to find a curious pair of trousers in Stockholm. You're gonna be like, go on Amazon. Amazon sells the most clothes ever.
Check
the numbers, bro. Bezos is swag. He's killing it. They're the best place to buy clothes.
We all know that Amazon fashion failed, and maybe you don't know that, and that's why I'm informing you now. But no, I think
Amazon.
That,
I buy clothes on Amazon, not Amazon brand.
I know that you buy your wife beaters and socks on Amazon, but I think that it's for some people it's a destination for other things. You know, I don't know. I've never really looked at the clothing beyond the kind of garments that we're talking about, you know, but I'm sure they
you
have some
great
offerings.
You can get some entry-level Carhartts over there.
Yeah, you can definitely get some Carhartts. Yeah, you could.
A little something for the uncle in your family.
I love the idea.
So good.
I love the idea of a blue-collar worker hitting Amazon to order his Carhartts versus going to the local workwear store.
Mom, do you have Prime?
I need these
Carhartts
tomorrow.
I haven't called in a while, but can I use your Amazon Prime to order these pants? I broke my other ones. What else was I going to say? What time is it? I guess we almost have our guests here. We got a guest. I could talk to Ed about this as well. Somebody sent me this yesterday on Eater LA. Somebody wrote an article, the title or the headline, as people call it, the hottest new accessory in LA restaurants, your takeout containers from home. People bring their own bags to grocery stores and metal water bottles everywhere.
Oh.
So why not apply that line of thinking to dining out?
Oh, God.
Woo.
This is a nightmare.
Bro, unless...
this is a nightmare.
Unless this is an all-you-can-eat buffet or something where you plan to steal.
I can't with that. All right, look. Ed, our guest is Ed Cumming. He's a... writer and editor from beautiful London. He works at the Telegraph, but he also writes for one of my favorite independent magazines called The Fence. That is so British I can barely understand it, but I really like to support them.
Okay.
So let's give Ed a jingle.
Fantastic. Korea World is a new cookbook written by Dookie Hong and friend of the show Matt Rodbard. The New York Times best-selling authors of the book Koreatown.
Korea World is a vibrant exploration of the evolution of Korean cuisine, both in Korea and in Korea towns across the United States, with more than 75 bold, flavor-packed recipes and stunning photography.
The authors take an inside look at the exciting evolution of Korean food through stories of chefs, home cooks, as well as recipes that are shaping modern Korean cuisine.
The book begins in Seoul, where the barbecue scene is pushing into new territory and where the city's third wave coffee culture is exploding.
The tour continues with late night food adventures in Los Angeles, my hometown, and stops into the kitchens of innovative chefs from New York City to Portland, who are putting modern spins on Korean classics.
Recipes include giant short ribs, whole fried smash rockfish, and pineapple kimchi fried rice.
I'm sad I didn't get to name the foods and you did. Korea World is essential reading for anyone curious about the future of food.
Available wherever books are sold.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Babbel. I fancy myself a trilinguist myself, but it usually only applies when I'm ordering food in restaurants. So, you know, I'm picking up Babbel so I can have some more conversational Spanish, Vietnamese, and other languages. I feel like everyone knows the food stuff, but, you know, taking an extra step in case you're in a situation when you're traveling, you're in the hills of Oaxaca, you don't have service for your little Google Translate shit, learn it the old-fashioned way with Babbel.
Do the work. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/howlong. Get 55% off, that's more than half, at babbel.com/howlong, spelled BABBEL.com/howlong. Rules and restrictions may apply.
That 50% off discount is great, as I am unfortunately fluent in broken knees.
We were talking right before you came on about a new dining trend that Jason was alerted to thanks to the good people at Grub Street.
No, it was on Eater.
Where the cup
Eater.
Oh, Eater, I'm sorry. I get these important outlets confused. I guess what's happening in Los Angeles is the cucked community are bringing their own takeout containers to restaurants. Jason, is that?
Yeah, they're showing up to LA restaurants with their takeout containers already from home. So, you know, their Tupperware, whatever it might be, reusable plastic containers. I think it's sort of like we're going to take this food to go regardless. So I think I've seen it before where people have like anxiety for when the meal is done. And it's usually with some type of mom person around, metaphorically, spiritually, or literally, take that however.
Yeah,
but when it's time, when it's time to get the check and would you like any of this to go, it like this anxiety kicks in and you have this control thing and everyone has to show how they are the best at packing all the stuff together and making it all. And, you know, it's like, I'm proud of myself for doing this. So I think it's kind of like I'm showing up to the putt-putt golf with my own putter kind of thing, or like, you know, I know what I'm doing kind of thing. And that is all behind a shroud of environmentalism.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's strictly performative environmentalism, which luckily you guys don't really participate in over the pond.
No, this is I'm interested to hear about this because the whole takeout phenomenon, the idea of having so much food that you need some kind of receptacle from home, like a rucksack or an enormous pot to take it home because the restaurant has given you 15,000 calories for your entree. This is a kind of uniquely American phenomenon. One that
this is a good point.
Okay. That's okay.
Unfortunately, okay. he's right, and I don't look. I love our large portions, and bigger is better. Just ask Drake. But I think that the shade that you're throwing is fair, but it's not like you guys are eating healthy or are the portions that much smaller. Let's be honest.
Yeah, you guys are fat, just as fat as we are.
Yeah, but we're fat with through the accumulation of smaller portions.
Okay, so you're just ordering several several portions and spreading it out, and we're getting it all on one plate of slop, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're eating one big biscuit, and you're having 14 of them, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you're having like a Philly cheesesteak covered in, you know, fries. Or whatever, but we invented high tea, which is a completely unnecessary meal in the middle of the afternoon where you have a cake for no good reason, where old women have cakes covered in jam and cream in a kind of hotel foyer, and that's seen as a kind of national sport, right? So that's maybe where some of the extra pounds
come
from. You know,
Ed, I just went on record as a tea hater, and I'm receiving some blowback for that. Shout out to our PG Tips Hive. But I have never had high tea, and I've always wanted to do it at Claridge's because it seems like a rite of passage for any American teenage girl who's visiting London. And But the prices are unbelievable.
I love eating these sweets. I can have all of them, mother.
the prices. I mean, it's like $200 to have the high tea. Is it not?
It ain't low tea.
Yeah, but that, I mean, you guys bring that home like an hour, right? I mean,
yeah. Look,
it's median American salary.
Yeah, it's nothing about. This isn't a judgment on my income or American income. This is strictly how many cakes can one person eat for $200? That's the question.
I always assumed, yeah, that the pricing of those high teas was to make wealthier tourists feel at home, like a kind of methadone spending for Americans. Like when they arrive, it's like, okay, well, how can we possibly spend a sensible amount on a meal? And you go to Claridge's and have a small cake and it's like, okay, this is a kind of, you know, this is like a standard outlay. You've not done it yet.
Right. Standard outlay.
We'll take you next time you're in town.
I would love I want to know what's the of a normal spread like this at any of these kind of the hotels. What is the kind of star cake in your opinion? What is the number one?
Well, also, Chris, don't sleep on savory. I love a crisp, crustless cucumber sandwich.
I don't love those, but I do know it's part of the display. It's on offer.
Yeah, Jason's right. That's the highlight, I would say. That's the
okay.
Yeah, the little sandwich without a crust. That's a pleasure.
Okay. Okay.
A little triangle.
But I could make those at home for £1,
no,
you know?
Don't do that.
You peel the cucumber at home? I think you have more self-respect than that.
No. Part of my 2024 resolution is to make everything myself.
Okay.
Well, aside from growing my own produce and raising my own vegetables and eggs and things like that, but like, if I want to make a sandwich, bake the bread. You know what I mean?
So you're going to do like a kind of English fetish core high tea at home. You're going to invite people around.
I didn't know you were doing this. What are you back to the land? Did you like, what is it the 1800s? Like, are you making your own butter? What do you think this is going to do for you?
I've been making my own orange juice, which is not that hard, but it's a pain in the ass.
Okay. I could do that. Come on.
No, anyone can do it. I mean, I make my broths. I'm just, you know, whenever it's like a good habit, and I think it's like a healthy connection to what you're putting in your body for me to just like, if it is you know, relatively feasible and possible and not ridiculous for me to just make everything myself. And you have a better connection to it. It's healthier for you. You know exactly what's going in and what's not going in. It's satisfying. You could put it on Instagram stories. The list goes on.
Is this like a Noma thing? Have you been Noma pilled?
It does feel like it does feel like that. It does feel like that.
Taste of your heritage.
No. Noma's not the only restaurant that makes their own food.
No, but they talk about it a lot.
It makes absolutely everything.
They do make their own well, not everything. When I went and had the bread and butter, I was like, oh man, tell me about this bread and butter. And they're like, oh, we bought it. I was like, yeah, but you make your own butter though, right? And they're like, well, we have a lovely butter person in town that we get it from. I was like, all right. And then, well, I wrote a review of Noma, and one of the big kickers was that my favorite thing that I ate there was the bread and butter, and that was the one thing that they didn't make there.
I know, it was great, but they were kind of sad about that.
You know, nobody reached out from Noma.
It wasn't that bad.
So, but I don't know.
Well, I think that bread and butter is a good example of something that I feel like people spend their lives perfecting, and I would trust a lifelong baker before a Noma intern. Is that not fair?
That's a good point. That's a very good
point. I just feel like it's such a hard thing to master.
But I feel like in order to become a Noma intern or
stagiaire
or whatever, you're already the best baker in your tiny village in, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
Woolamaloo.
No, that's true. Yeah, you're the best baker in rural Denmark, which is, you know, it's probably competitive, honestly. Like, they ain't got much going on
out
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you work up through the, like, minor leagues, make it to the majors,
yeah,
then finally go international.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it looks.
Up to the big show.
Jason, since we're reuniting IRL soon, I want to have one of these meals where everything is from the cold, dead hands of them jeans.
I got you, bro. You're not going to like it, but I got you.
I'm not going to like it, that's for sure.
Well,
but
speaking of tea, and we can move on from there. When we were talking about tea and Chris was on his tea-hating rampage, and then also people reach out to me and they're like, why the fuck are you drinking PG Tips? You know, you're better than that, blah, blah, blah. So you, as a food expert, smart, tidy writer, and British person, I want you to prescribe a tea brand to Chris and to I based on our personality traits.
Right. Well, hang on. Wait, Chris.
don't say right as if that's a normal question. Very good then. Very good then.
I'm trying to think of something that's just the right amount of shade.
Don't worry. I edit the pod, so take your time.
Hang on. Chris, do you seek stimulants in this field, or is your like drink?
Ed, I love stimulants, and luckily, since I can't do any of the good ones, I'm left with only water based beverages to deliver the hit that I need.
Right. Okay. So you just want some kind of builder rocket fuel.
Yes.
You know, where you leave the bag in for like 40 minutes, okay, with like nine sugars in it.
40?
It's a kind of lukewarm Red Bull.
Okay. Yeah.
And
okay.
When you say a builder tea, what does that mean exactly for our American ears that might not know?
So a builder tea is a classic British middle class dilemma.
Oh, I'm out.
Where you have to... where like a tradesman
is builder
literal,
it's not derogatory in this
no, it's like your classic, it's like a non-fancy tea, it's like a tea, it's in a mug rather than a fancy cup, it's like the opposite.
Even
of
a poor
situation.
Shit builder would drink this is what
it's
you're
more
saying.
Like
okay.
It's robust, it often has sugar in okay. it, it's you know, full fat milk, it's good, it's the real stuff, it's
strong.
I do product. Like that you're it. Prescribing okay. me something that's kind of, you know, working class, because I
yeah.
you know, I do just
it's
like
not a pansy ass tea.
Yeah, I'm not, but I do like, you know, just a cup of Joe. So this feels along the same lines in the tea realm, in the tea space.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the most broiest badass build a tea brand out right now?
Oh my god. This is it's a finer points of gradation. I could not you know, people, I mean, my wife is like a huge tea head, as like a kind of I mean, I prefer coffee, but she's...
Yeah, you're a real man. You're a real man, Ed. I like that about you.
She's a kind of six plus cups a day.
Oh, wow.
And she has Yorkshire tea.
Okay.
So a lot of people would swear by that, I say.
Okay.
There's a whole... This is going to make people unsubscribe rapidly, but there is a whole school of like... what? Whether you need certain teas for certain waters. Like in London, the water is very, very hard, very like minerally. So you need kind of more robust tea.
Okay.
Interesting.
But you don't need to get into that.
No.
And then hang on, wait. Jason, do you drink tea?
Only if I have to. No. I've been drinking tea. I got a big thing of PG Tips just because I am a coffee drinker as well, but sometimes I can have a second or a third cup later in the afternoon if I need to get some work done, and I just don't like how much that gets me fucking kind of spracked out. So I started drinking some like plain black tea, builder tea in many ways.
Yeah, you should get on the
later in
tea.
The afternoon.
You'd enjoy it. Okay. It's good. It's not as much of a commitment as a coffee. I think that's what's nice.
What the fuck do you mean by, yeah, okay, so today I was like, I'm desperate for an iced coffee. I'm in Berlin and I was like, I'm desperate. So I go to like the a place called The Barn, which was quite good. And like the three guys behind the counter were all dorks, like coffee guys. And they were like, oh yeah, we can do an iced pour over. Okay. And I was like, all right, cool, sure. And it gave me the caffeine jolt I was looking for, but I don't understand that you're pouring hot water into coffee, which goes into ice. Am I wrong in that estimation? Is that what's happening?
I guess.
Yes, that is what's happening.
Okay, that's...
But the only reason why they're doing is because they don't have pre-made cold brew.
Yes.
Because there's no demand for it there, so...
Yes.
This is, unfortunately, the most efficient way for you to get...
But that's just interesting to me because the pour-over is the best cup of coffee normally, you know, because of the way it's done, where this just felt like it was fine, and it tasted good, but I was just... surprised. I've seen it before, but I don't know. I'd never thought about the method.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wanted it iced? You made your bed, you're going to lay in it, bitch.
That's true. That's true. It's fucking American.
Moving on from tea, let's get into biscuits. How important are biscuits in your culture over there?
Biscuits? I had this insane day the other day. My job requires me to do a wide range of things, often in quite a short space of time.
Welcome to the club, honey.
So, yesterday I found myself going,
I have to sell McNugget buddies or they hit me.
Oh yeah, those guys, are they still going? They fly off the shelves.
Good luck getting your hands on one, Chief.
The How Long Gone effect put those guys all over Grailed for prices that I don't think you could afford on your salary, but something to think about.
Maybe take a second mortgage on the flat and you can afford the full set.
That's probably true. I find the ads so entertaining. They you know, there's this old saying in like newspapers that you read the ads for the good news and the newspaper for the bad news.
Oh,
have you heard that?
No, I haven't heard that, but I like it.
So it's like, you know, there's murder and an earthquake and whatever, but look, everyone's buying Cartier. Mm-hmm. That's like,
Yes, or an espresso
machine or something. But I feel like with the ads, it's with you guys. It's like the good news is in the pod, and then the ads. I'm like, oh, okay. I need mental health help. I'm ordering McDonald's. I'm hungover. I need some kind of restorative green juice.
Interesting. Oh,
right, okay. I kind of end up thinking long and hard about myself.
That's good.
Well, you're welcome or you're sorry.
Yeah, you choose.
or I'm sorry. Sorry.
I'm ordering... I don't know. It's like maybe if I ordered less McDonald's to be delivered, I wouldn't need the online mental health support.
Well, slow down. Let's not.
When's the last time you ordered McDonald's?
I've done that exactly once to like just to prove that I could. But I kind of I've always felt like walking to
so
McDonald's.
It's like a power move.
Well, it's like they've built something. You should try it. You know, they've gone to the trouble of making this incredible situation. It was something obviously that one dreamed of as a child. Mm-hmm. And finally it was here as an adult.
What is the British version of that? Is it just the like kebab shop?
Oh yeah. It's the kebab.
Okay. I think that it's obviously that's different because it's independent and you're supporting minorities, which is cool.
Yeah.
Whereas McDonald's is, you know.
I feel like a late night kebab is one of the great things that sobriety will spare you.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Booking.com. Booking. Yeah, from cozy bed and breakfast to trendy boutique hotels, with so many choices across the beautiful United States of America, you can book whoever you want to be. That can look like booking a 5-star hotel to indulge your luxury side, that's me, or booking a remote cabin in the woods to explore your adventurous side.
So, spring has sprung, the sun is out, the sun is shining, I can't wait to get to New York. Check out booking.com for your ideal hotel or vacation home, no matter where you go in the U.S.
Booking. Yeah.
Book whoever you want to be on booking.com. Booking. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding, like a dog. You know, you have a great head of hair, Jason. Can you speak on this?
Yeah, you hear this? That's my thick Nutrafol bottle shaking in there. If you open up the lid, a little ASMR, it says, keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
It says that on the inside of the lid. Motivational. The pills look like a classic turmeric supplement, so it'll be familiar going down your mouth, but it doesn't have that sting of turmeric.
Mm.
What it does have is the sting of visibly thicker, healthier hair.
Let's go. Yeah, so if you have any hair thinning, shedding, or any other hair issues, Nutrafol has a proactive approach, and it has been known to improve hair growth, decrease shedding, add visible thickness, and it's a clinically effective formula. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off the first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOWLONG. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code HOWLONG. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code HOWLONG. Because they aren't good?
They're like the best thing you'll put in your mouth ever, you know, if you've had 8 pints.
But you can never eat that for lunch. You have to sort of be drunk to eat it.
Yeah, you can eat it for lunch if you don't have to work in the afternoon, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it puts you down. It'll take you out a little bit. It'll take you out a little bit. Yeah, that's you got to have something. You got to have something.
Well, speaking of Americans eating a large amount of calories, I was listening to something that you wrote, and you mentioned something that I wanted you to expand on. Mm. You said the phrase American style long reads.
Yeah.
So maybe implying that Americans read longer things than other people. And I wanted a little bit more clarity on that, please. Cause I don't know if especially compared to your people, if we're necessarily known for our reading.
Yeah. That's like, this is in magazine journalism, especially, I suppose, but there's you know, that like New Yorker school of, you know, magazine journalism, which is like the guy goes and spends 6 months talking to the thing, and it's so reported, and there's all these bits in it where
also check out Patrick Radden-Keefe's newest story on a British kid who fell off
friend of the show
Patrick Radden-Keefe. I was speaking to him this morning actually about something else. He sends his love.
Great story.
We did not deserve to have him on the podcast. Once I did more research on him, I didn't know who he was when we had him on, and now that I follow him and I've seen him work, I've seen his work, I'm like, why the fuck did he do How Long Gone? That's crazy.
He was delighted to do it. He said I mentioned I was coming on, and he said it was great because he'd spent all this time on tour, you know, doing serious book tours and being asked serious deep questions about his work.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, and it was just so refreshing.
Yeah. We don't even know what the IRA is.
Yeah.
What a delight.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Continue though. What is the?
Oh yeah. So well, he's a perfect example, right? So that piece was amazing about, you know, London, about the kid who died in London. And he, and so that's a great example. He spent 5 months. He had incredible access. He went to everyone. He got quotes from absolutely everyone. There's this passage in it I do find really funny, that these New Yorker pieces, they often have this, you can kind of see the moment where they say, and London was founded in, 800 BC by ancient Rome, and then like draws this big line that speaks to the rest of the piece. But I think, you know, in magazine journalism anyway, that's the kind of acme of the form, right? And in Britain, there's this culture of like kind of imitative, less good versions of long reads. You know, I guess it stems from the difference between British and American journalism generally, right? Where, you know, if you're an American journalist, you're a kind of Jedi Knight and you're, you know, it's very serious. It's like capital J. It's all very like, and then everyone takes it very like a kind of calling. Whereas I think the difference is the word hack.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like I've told other Americans, they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm a hack. Kind of proudly, and they're like, "Oh, don't say that about yourself. I'm sure it's good. Your work." I'm like, "No, it's fine." I think you know the British school is much more like, "Go and rummage in this guy's bins this morning, and then we'll all go to the pub."
Okay, I mean, look, that sounds better. So
when you said an American style long read, that was not a derogatory term. That is maybe out of jealousy.
Yeah, that was self deprecating. Like you try and do all of this stuff, and then the only thing that people, you know, people are just interested in something dumb you wrote where you said I got a free meal in a restaurant.
Yeah, who's the opinion writer guy who always has his like, it's like a kind of a bald white guy, and it's always just like a story like, why I think the park is stupid or something like that. Like, that's what you people want to read, right?
Yeah, Adrian Charles, are you thinking of?
I think so. He kind of always has a grumpy look on, and he's always doing an opinion piece about something that is really enjoyable to me.
He's a genius, I think, that guy. He's a, you know, he's perfected the form of the stupid little thing that everyone wants to read.
I know, I'm jealous.
Yeah, just like why I hate music.
Yeah, no.
Or, you know, something like that. Or like we need to stop.
There's also someone like that at Financial Times that gets destroyed all the time, and he does like a weekly kind of similar kind of thing, but not quite as clever.
Yeah, and there's this other guy who does that at The Strategist, Chris Black.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
No, I mean, the attempt to write something every week that is like, you know, part of what is going on is tough, because like I wanted this week, I wrote about Apple goggles, but I wanted to write about the Chloe 7 Yee dog thing, but then I was afraid of dog owners and if they would come for me. And I think that our British friend isn't afraid, Jason. That's the thing. I'm trying to build up to that.
Yeah. I'm very Adrian Charles, yeah, he's not afraid. But I mean, you go after the dog guys at your peril, right? Have you done that yet?
I know.
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday every week on How Long Gone.
Yeah. Not in print, so it doesn't count.
No. Yeah, the dog people need to get knocked down a peg every once in a while, myself included.
I just think we could cap them.
The amount of dogs?
Yeah, it could be like a raffle or whatever. You could be like, imagine how excited you'd be if you just saw like, if there was like, I don't know how many dogs there are, but if there was like 1 in 10
considerably
dogs.
Less dogs, it would be, you're right.
Kind of like how they do in China, where they kind of control how many children you can have. Interesting theory, Ed. I'll look into it.
Huh. I thought you leaned left, but I guess not.
Authoritarian dog left.
Yeah.
I was wondering as well how do people normally get 24-hour notice for this, or was it like
no.
You're a special case because I was, because of many things, we had a couple slots open,
right.
And I called you to fill said slot. Does that make you feel slighted?
That is fantastic. I was just wondering what the, like, I just working. I mean, obviously, you know, the horn of Gondor blows, I'm coming.
Yeah.
But the
you don't know how podcasting works. I mean, your wife does it, but you know, still, maybe you don't get this it, is dude. Normal, right?
I have no idea. I was just wondering because it's like, I don't know. Have there been like another strike, and like every creative in America had suddenly like
no. We would appeal to.
Is this like Chris's terminal anglophilia reaching like
a new height?
Critical moment.
No,
not book anyone unless they are British. It is starting to become a nuisance. It's an answer that especially based on where you live. It's the answer is going to probably anger you, which is. And you won't believe it, but Los Angeles in the last week has gone through an immense rain shower that has truly had multiple guests have to cancel because of issues around the weather.
Right.
Because their home, because their Laurel Canyon, you know, crumbling mansion has been taken over by God's piss, and there's nothing they can do.
But there's been power outages, Wi-Fi outages, roofs collapsing, floors leaking. So it's really hurt the LA podcasting community. Without our Wi-Fi, we are nothing.
We had to cross. It's the only safe place to be. That's why I'm in Berlin. The only safe place to be is Europe. you know, to get it. So I had to, yeah. I knew if I contacted
I've got my MacBook Pro running on a generator right now. It's not a pretty sight.
Jason's in a tent indoors.
Right. But
I knew that in the UK, it's the usual, you know, concrete sky, gloom and doom of the winter. And, you know, I know you guys stop working at 4 p.m. So I thought this was perfect. I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, I know. It's fun. I mean, obviously, it's fantastic for me. I'm glad that I've been the beneficiary of a flood. Like, those animals in the ark or whatever.
It's a very big one for you.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a fair question. And no, you know, I pride myself on kind of keeping this calendar tidy and quite far out. But sometimes... sometimes, you know, factors that are beyond my control intervene, and it benefits others.
I told a friend I was coming on. I don't know if he's a friend of the show yet, but Conrad K, who writes Industry.
Yeah.
And he was like, I think this is an Anglophile cry for help.
He's like
Laura Snapes and Raven Smith is one thing, but you know.
No, I mean, look, we do.
If we've contacted you, then things are dire, is what you're saying.
This is something has gone wrong, and an apocalyptic flood in California does explain it.
We do pretty well with British people and gay people, right. So that you fall into at least one of those categories.
Yeah, at least one.
And Sporty Spice had to push, so here we are.
And Raven Smith was having his driving test yesterday. Today, so I guess he was otherwise engaged.
I know. I texted him about it actually because I was like, it's impressive that it's manual.
It is.
Which
he's a stick man.
He's not
knowing how to drive is so on brand for Raven.
Knowing how to drive is pretty cool, honestly. Like I can't imagine it because I need it, but when people can't drive or they're like, oh yeah, I don't do that.
Many British folks, depending on where you live, they can't be arsed. There's no real reason to, right?
You got a car, Ed?
No, we got rid of it. We had our the catalytic converter got stolen by these guys. Oh, just came in the night and chopped it
really?
off, so we just didn't replace it. And we haven't missed it. It's heaven.
Really? Okay, so because you have kids, so you needed a car.
A couple top boys stole my catalytic converter and it's been heaven ever since.
It was good, man. It was like it was a weight off my shoulders. It's the decision's taken out of your hands. You're like, well, I'm no longer a driving person. That's fine.
The universe spoke to you.
Yeah.
Cars are a pain in the ass. I mean, it's nothing but a money pit and annoyances.
I found it insane on that trip when we bumped into each other, Chris. That was, so the start of that trip was in Houston.
Yes.
Which I'd never been to before. And I could not believe
what a delight
the scale of that, you know, where it's like I would Google where can I get a coffee, and it'd be like, oh yeah, there's this cute little neighborhood place, it's only 8 miles away.
sure.
And you call an Uber and this kind of like, you know, thing that was used to invade Iraq turns up and you're like, okay, well I guess we'll use this to get a latte. That's fine.
I guess we could do this. No, that's
so I trundle off in that.
I love the idea of you in Texas. You were writing a story, right?
No one's ever trundled anywhere in Houston, just for the record. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, what do they do? I was on the trail of a man who actually, mercifully, I probably won't have to explain to you guys who he is, but I've spent most of the past 2 months telling English people who he is. Morgan Wallen.
Yes. Now I'm remembering.
He's one of our most famous racists.
I went to the Morgan Wallen show in Houston.
I bet that was a fucking motion picture.
It was a good scene. Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. We like hung out a bit. I met some of the other guys. I met a lot of people who'd never met an English person.
Yes. Okay.
So a lot of people wearing the full gear. It's quite a scene over there.
You sure do talk funny.
So yeah.
How long did it take you to stop calling him Morgan?
Wait, hang on. What am I doing it wrong?
No, you're doing it right.
Well, no, you're saying it correctly, but like Americans, like that's Morgan.
Morgan.
But I want you to say Morgan as if it's
Morgan. Morgan. Morgan.
Don't bring me the 2017 Morgan. It's it's turned.
Yeah, it was a very young Morgan.
How did you find him in general? Is he a pro or is he pretty loose with it?
Yeah, man, he was on. He was on.
Yeah.
You know, he was tight. It's like this guy, he had them in the palm of his hand. Everyone knew every syllable. You know, everyone was there. And then I saw him in London like a month later and it was the same deal. And it was an interesting comparison because actually there was some parallels in the crowd, and that I think, you know, in London, he sold out the O2. There was very little overlap with like a national gig.
Sure.
You know, it was like Scots, it was guys from Wales, it was guys from Essex. And they were loving it. And I don't know whether that's like, whether that tracks in kind of people who feel a bit left out of like a lot of the mainstream you know, music discourse, but they just love it. I mean, the difference in America is that all the Morgan Wallen fans are absolutely loaded.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the country music thing that's true. It's like a lot of those people are rich, you know. That's like when Jason and I went to see Joe Rogan, you know, it's like guys who build houses, you know, or have like a contracting company, and they got money and they want to put it in Morgan's pocket.
Yeah. And it's a great show. You know, he's got big songs. They, you know, everyone loves him. He delivers the thing, and then they move on with their lives.
Did he turn you into a fan?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I kind of, like, I definitely think that there's a feeling in Britain, or at least the kind of the music intellectual class in the UK doesn't engage nearly seriously enough with country.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to Snapes about that, actually.
Yeah. And Yeah, of course. So, well, I mean, she's much more learned. But it was interesting to see it on the ground and realize how little these people care about England and Europe. Like the guy, you know, if you go to New York or California or whatever, people are kind of a bit more in touch. But these guys have amazing, happy, prosperous lives. They love Morgan Wallen, and they do not give a shit about what you're doing in London. Mm-hmm. And
it is nice.
It's quite chastening and important.
It is nice to see people completely free of anything, any thoughts, and just being like, I love this music. I'm going to spend my money to go see it. You know, and it's just like, I'm not thinking about the implications.
Doesn't need shoes for school. I'm going to go see, I think I need the orchestra section when I see him at the O2.
It is. I mean, O2 is big too. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah. Like wild. His first gig he'd ever played in Europe, he sells out the O2, and yet, you know, he's barely been covered in any press over here. It's just this thing that happens without anyone noticing it.
It's a groundswell. Well, speaking of the O2 arena, can you explain to us, maybe this would have been better for a Snapes question, but you're all we've got now.
Yeah.
Can you explain why and how recording artist Pink is so big over there?
I have no idea. I think it's like is it a legacy thing from the aughts? She had like a few humongous songs.
She's big.
And then that's just carried on.
You probably don't listen to a lot of Pink, but maybe just as a, you know, a British historian or a master of your culture, because Pink is obviously a big person everywhere in the world, but specifically, like, she would never play like a music festival in America. Like, she would never play Coachella. She would never play any of these cool festivals. She just sort of has to play like...
She's playing in stadiums.
Yeah, she plays in stadiums.
Literally.
No, she's huge, but like...
Literally.
But over there, she's cool. She's cool over there. She will headline festivals.
I mean,
cool, not cool, cool. Cool for British.
Did she pay fealty at some point?
Maybe.
Did she like kiss the European ring
She
at
probably
some
did.
Or English
well, she's
ring?
Also very...
Because that...
She's very big...
That's a real thing.
...in Australia. And, you know, Australia and England are closely linked, as you know.
Of course, yeah. Basically the same place. I mean, I think there's definitely a phenomenon of people who do... I think Stanley Tucci is like the key example of this, of like a guy who's kind of mid-famous, but because he has, you know, deigns to live in Barnes or wherever he lives in West London, and he's married to an English woman in England, he's now this like unimpeachable, like high celebrity.
Oh, interesting. So he married a British chick and moved there. So now he's British. He's been accepted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's married to Emily Blunt's sister, who's a literary agent.
He's married to Emily Blunt's sister?
Yeah.
Wait, Stanley Tucci is?
Yeah. You guys haven't had the Tucci. This is what I'm talking about, you know? And
well, I only talk about how he's gay. I did not know that he was married. I mean, everyone knows he's gay, right?
Right, okay, yeah. I mean, I know. I was more on the married to a woman thing. But, you know, I guess they're not.
Would he be the first actor who was gay but married to a woman? Come on, don't play dumb with us, Ed.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, he was very convincing in that film with Colin Firth.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Where he played the 70-year-old novelist with a six-pack.
That's...
You know, that was...
that's very realistic.
Yeah, I just looked up Pink in 2023, just months ago. Pink has her own festival.
In the UK.
She has a touring festival all over the place where Gwen Stefani, Brandi Carlile, Pat Benatar open for her, as well as Group Love.
That's Lilith Fair, baby.
Like, she doesn't play festivals. She is a festival. Hyde Park.
Yeah.
You know, she's it.
It's wild.
She's like as big as Blackpink.
As Blackpink. Pink and Blackpink are equally big.
No, they're
There's
not.
A joke in there somewhere. There's a joke in there.
No
somewhere.
One's as
not,
big as
no
Blackpink.
One. Yeah. Well, I think Blackpink's kind of over. Is that not true, Jason? Is it kind of is it waning? I'm asking.
We're in between album cycles.
Okay. I just feel like it was inescapable.
No, I have no idea. I have no idea. But I am a fan for our listeners. The new song from Twice, the better K-pop group musically.
Someone was complaining about Blackpink. I saw Blackpink in but they just played Hyde Park in the summer, and someone who'd been there for that night was talking about some hammers and saying it was the most genius merchandise they'd ever seen.
Hold on,
like they have
like the to nail something into the wall.
So Blackpink have a song, and with this song, there's a thing like a move, which is that all of the crowd waves these little plastic pink hammers.
Okay.
It's like a light stick little hammer, and it's like, okay, for this song everyone has to wave a hammer, which means that all of the kids that are there are like, okay, well, I can't not have a hammer.
Yeah.
And the hammer's like $100.
Yeah. So it looks like something that a woman would pleasure herself with.
Right,
or okay, two yeah, guys well, maybe. I mean it looks like a sex toy. And then your kid will scream and slit their wrists if you don't buy them this $72 plastic light up thing. The idea for these shows is they all light up sort of in sync to the song at the right time, and it looks like this cool kind of crowd visual thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe they use Bluetooth.
You can't just get people to put their phones up and stuff, you know?
Back in my day.
That's archaic. You can't make money off that. I mean, what's the fucking point? That's actually very cool. I love that for them. And I think that's people go to shows like that ready to spend their parents' money. That's like what the point is. So you got to milk them for all they're worth.
We'll get that to the Oasis reunion.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a website called K-Pop Exchange, and people are making like plush hammer stick covers. Where you know, like the little beanies, or that they have little like ears on them to make you look like a cute little bunny or something like that, or like they have those, but for your Blackpink hammer, as well as a holding stand for it to keep it on your desk.
It just feels violent. That's why I'm so impressed with it. You know that it feels like giving kids hammers is the wrong signal.
It's violent. Mm. It's violently expensive.
Oof. I guess I didn't think about that angle.
I mean, it's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
It was a little... it hit the nail on the head is what it did.
There you go.
So, Ed, Ash Wednesday coming up. Any plans? I know that it's better than spending a hellish time on hellish Valentine's Day. I'd like to hear more about
this
that.
This is the problem with having such a diverse remit, I think. Because in my head, I was thinking, I was like, okay, well, maybe they'll like... want to talk about articles that I've written, a while back or whatever when we were meeting. And then obviously the first thing that comes up is a piece that I did about... Yeah, so this is like the collision of the...
Wait, did you write about this, Ed?
Oh, it's weird, isn't it? What a coincidence. The coincidence of Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I thought, Ash Wednesday is obviously a day of traditional like Christian self-flagellation and restraint. And Valentine's Day is a day where you go and buy a pizza shaped like a heart. I thought that maybe Ash Wednesday was a good opportunity to spare your loved one that kind of ordeal.
Well, I did not know that Ash Wednesday was so close to Valentine's Day. So bravo for...
Well, it moves around.
Finding the through line. I just assumed that there were multiple Ash Wednesdays throughout the year. Clearly, I'm not a religious person.
Actually, I thought that was true. I thought that too, Jason, to be fair. I thought Ash Wednesday happened like four times a year.
Sick. I mean, yeah. I only know when it's Ash Wednesday when Mark Wahlberg Ash posts on Maine.
Not a lot of
you.
Sunday school going on.
No.
I meant to ask you guys about how you'd found Graydon Carter, who's another friend we have in common.
How we found him?
I mean, he's the greatest.
He's a fucking knob. Just kidding. Chris loves him. I loved making fun of him, and he loved making fun of me. But him and I do not get along.
Because you had him on just after I'd met him.
Yes, yeah. He's the only guy that can make anything good. And I mean, it's crazy. Like it's Vanity Fair needs him. We all need him. And Airmail is going to sell for $50 million to the roofers. And it's going to be right. It's going to be good for everybody. You know, it's going
to
be good for
to everybody. The builders.
To the builders. Yeah, the builders. The builders are buying.
I'll buy your dinky little newspaper. Let me guess. What restaurant I should go to? Oh, the Waverly Inn. I'll check it out. Yeah,
it's the builder guys buying everything is very cool. Like, it's very interesting. It's funny that rich people want magazines and publications as their like playthings. I just find it like there's no real path to profitability often, but they still want to pump money into it. And I just it's like the new restaurant as like a vanity project, but it just costs a lot more money.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of always been the case. I mean, aside from a couple of windows, and you know, Graydon and Anna and Tina's, you know, time at Condé was one of them. You know, magazines and newspapers have not been like the great businesses,
mm-hmm.
but they're, you know, they're fun and they give you influence. And there was just this boom just before the internet, you know, where they didn't have budgets and things. But it's great news. I think anyone who wants to buy a magazine.
You used to be able to get you laid.
Yeah. Or being a journalist.
I think all these builders are buying up newspapers and newsletters now only because they can't remember their digital wallet password. They want to be buying crypto, but they just forgot their login.
What do you reckon is the AML special sauce, though? What do you think? Why does it work? I agree with you. I think it's great.
Because of Graydon. That's because that's the whole thing. I mean, you can, if you look at Vanity Fair now, it's not very good, and that's because he's not there. You know, it's that's just what it is. I mean, I think that there people don't like this because it doesn't feel fair, but there are people that really do have like a singular vision, and if they do something that they put their mind to, it's better than everybody else's. And people just don't like that. People want it to be like a democratic team effort. You know, people don't like the idea of someone kind of sitting at the top and making the decisions and touching everything that comes out. That's
why scaling is a fool's errand. I agree with you, Chris. That's a wise insight, and I like that. And that's why I hope to never have an employee for how long gone.
Yeah, no. I mean, I just don't like.
They're not gonna like my ideas, and then they're gonna get me canceled.
I mean, when you read about him, a lot of people in these positions, less so now, but you know, it's like they literally look at everything. You know, which seems insane, but that's why something is good, is because there's attention paid to details that other people might overlook, and that's what makes the big difference. And I just think most people are either lazy or don't want to do that, because it's obviously it's hard.
I think, I remember I spoke to Anna last year, and she said that she still read every word that they physically printed, which is obviously like diminishing, but not.
Yeah,
online.
She's like, well, not the Pitchfork stuff, but you know.
Yeah. She's like, I didn't check out the Tame Impala review. That wasn't for me.
She's not a big poptimist, Anna, but I think, you know, that, I mean, it speaks to this thing, doesn't it? Where you want to be part of like a little gang, right? You want to be part of Graydon's gang or Anna's gang.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, less so now.
It's validating.
Unfortunately, less so now because young people don't get it and don't understand that you can like actually learn from someone who's older. They're not just a boomer, you know? They don't, that like doesn't process. I mean, I'm sure there's still a generation that will fetishize all that stuff because that's what we do. We always look, you know, back and then decide that is cool as kids. So, I mean, It's dwindling though, I think. Like the desire to do that. Well, I'll just got a Substack. I don't need this, you know.
To be part of a little gang?
Well, to be part of something bigger than yourself seems like it's less attractive than it ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
The desire to work for yourself and be your own boss and be a brand is more important now than security, is what I'm saying. I think as an overall with a certain like demographic. I think it's like I'm never gonna be able to buy a house anyway. I eat avocado toast every day. Fuck it, you know. It's kind of the vibe. And
well, I can still be a brand.
Yeah, but I can be a brand. I mean, there was a great. I think it was Vox. Rebecca Jennings, I believe, is the writer's name. She's doing a really good job. It's cool, but she wrote a story about how, like, no matter what, now you just have to be a brand, you know. And I remember that in the early days of like Instagram and influencing, you know, if you were a writer at, you know, a magazine, like a especially women's magazine, it was kind of like, it was understood that you would make an effort to, you know, on social media. Like you couldn't just write your stories and do your job. You kind of, it was kind of like politely nudged to participate. And I think that is, I mean, overall, that's bad. We don't need everyone to be posting on Instagram if their job is to write stories.
It makes you less fireable, I think.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Well, in a competitive environment, if the difference, if two people are doing
totally
a similar job, one of them is hot and has 1.7 on Instagram, then guess who the job's gone to? You know?
No, of course. I know that's how the world works, and I'm accepting of that. I just don't know if that's the best for us as a society. I don't know.
For sure.
I don't know if that's... I mean, look, I love judging people based on their appearance. Don't get me wrong. but I think there is something to be said about being good at your job and kind of wanting to just do your job and not be chained to your phone all fucking day.
But what if you're good at podcasting and also, like, for a podcaster, not bad to look at, you know what I mean?
sure. No, though,
relatively, all things considered, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that if you're obviously if you're able to exploit your looks for financial gain, you should. I think that's what this country is built on. But I'm saying,
and you guys are doing a great job. Yeah.
Thank you. There are people though who are.
I do need to be posting more reels, if I can be honest.
Thank you for coming clean.
Well, speaking of selling out and exploiting, where do you land on sort of being a writer or a critic of something, maybe a restaurant, for example, and accepting gifts in exchange for favorable words? Can you be bought?
Absolutely, yeah.
How much integrity do you have? Okay, good answer.
I think, well, I mean, my big thing is I just think that there's this whole network of nonsense goes on all the time around restaurants and PR and media. I don't know if it's quite as bad. My sense is it's a bit less bad in the States. I remember this is years and years ago. I went to, like, is it the Library Bar at the Nomad or something?
Yes.
And I went there. I was booked in there and approached it like, like an English journalist approaches being booked in, which is like, I took three friends and we like drank for 2 hours. I left like $10 tip and walked out.
sure.
Legend.
And, you know, I was like, okay, thank you. This is a good experience. I'll be sure to write it up in the Telegraph someday. And then I saw the guy who'd been like the maitre d' about like 6 years later. And his first line was, "You owe me $400.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh shit, sorry. I didn't really appreciate that. But, you know, there's this whole, like, restaurant critics is one thing, and that's a very visible, you know, that's a very visible part of food writing, you know, the most visible, but they're all very grand about it now. They're like, well, I would never take a freebie.
I feel like they've always been grand about it, though. They've worked in secrecy, you know, there's this code of ethics, blah, blah, blah.
And yeah, and booking anonymously. And
I'm wondering, personally, as I'm starting to do it more, like, are these rules that anyone cares about being abided by anymore?
Not for you. That's what I'm saying. The rules only apply.
I mean, nobody's giving me a budget to buy this food anyway. So
no, but no one. The care, rules but... only apply to people who choose to live that way, kind of. You know what I'm saying? Ed, like no one expects that from Jason.
Nobody expects integrity from Jason.
I don't even mean that. I just mean like. If you want to be held to that standard, your life is going to be harder and you're not going to be able to have the same tone that you have, maybe, is what I'm saying.
I just think if you're open, you know, you see these influencers and they're posting, and like every time there's an ad, you know, it's like #ad. It's like, I don't care. I know what your life is like.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's need this all the time. I'm under no impression that you've scrimped and scraved to go to this, eco resort in the Seychelles in business class. I don't care. I just want to look at the nice pictures of you having a nice time and like eating out of a coconut or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. That's legally, you have to do that. I mean, it's literally, at least here, it's government mandate.
I want to see if you decided to tie the top of your bathing suit in the sideways way or just regular.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. I'm not really, I'm not very fussed who's getting the points on it at the end. I just think, there's an advertising regulation.
But I think that everybody, I mean, I think that that style of, right, I don't know if anybody... Like, I don't know if we need the anonymous, like, I wonder how much it matters and how much like that kind of review can really change a restaurant's business for better or worse
at
this point. Knows, yeah. you know? And I think it's like, you know, the hype machine in restaurants in London is so out of control.
Yeah.
You know, it's become very counterproductive. You know, the latest place is this pub, the Devonshire, right? Which I guess you might have seen like posted everywhere. It's, I mean, it's a great pub. It's like, it's combo of like Guinness fetish. You know, they sell 20,000 pints of Guinness a week or something. Wow. And it's just become this thing where everyone has to be there. And as a result, has become, you know, quite an unpleasant place to drink in.
Mm-hmm. You know? So it's strictly a pub. Are they offering a kind of well-considered pub menu as
well?
Yeah,
there's a
well-considered
pub menu. And if you want a table, you've got to be, you know, online at like 9:01 at exactly the right day.
So it's been fucked out, as they say.
It's good. It's just a steakhouse, you know. So you'd be so much, most people would be so much better off just going to another. It's, you know, it's good. There's no shade on what it's offering, but it's just that the effect of that mass hysteria is to ruin the experience.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's many restaurants. I mean, I like to go to a place when it's new and buzzing, obviously, to check out the hotties and get the vibes, but at a certain point, I mean, I think everything gets ruined. I mean, you know, it's like all the restaurants that celebrities go to in New York are, you can't, I mean, it's impossible. Like going to Via Carota is insane. Like you can't actually go there anymore because Taylor Swift went there once.
You can't do anything.
Well, I talked about this in the horses piece, like a restaurant like this Devonshire pub, they need one of the owners, the employees or something to have a scandal or a cancellation. And that will reduce the amount of traffic by 30 to 40%, making it inhabitable and pleasant to attend again.
Yeah.
And then it can go back to normal. Because I'm sure they don't like the fact that their restaurant has become a fucking tourist attraction, you know, 20,000. It's not fun. You're making money, but you're like killing yourself and it's you're not offering the product that you want to offer.
I think this is a good lesson generally, right? Like everything needs to be canceled once in a while.
Yeah.
Every person, everything. You just need to spend a bit of time in the cleansing fire.
Trimming the garden.
Cleansing the... What is the deal? Can you do a quick explainer before we go about Strakers?
Yeah.
Because I swear to God, I've heard so much about this. And then it's like in the Daily Mail. So I'm like, is this hot chef really that diabolically bad? Or is it just like because he's rich?
He just doesn't care, I don't think.
Well, and can you explain this situation for our people who don't know what you're talking
about? Thomas Straker is this... he's this like kind of, you know, handsome... you know, vaguely posh chef who had a really big lockdown doing like cooking videos.
He smashed it during lockdown.
Very hypey, like making videos of butter and stuff. And then finally opened a physical restaurant. But he posted this picture. I'm getting the details wrong, but he posted this picture like of him, of his staff. And they were just like all white dudes. And he was like, well, check out my great team.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone was like, well, this is just white dudes. And he replied just being like, kind of being like, oh.
Like, I don't care.
And he famously said, white people are the best chefs. And then he got in trouble after that.
No, I honestly just don't think he was thinking about that stuff very much.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it was funny because it was an unforced error, right? I find funny when these things happen to people where there's like, you know, sometimes you do stuff or whatever, like things happen, but sometimes these guys just come, like no one was asking him how diverse his kitchen was.
Right.
He just decided to
post a photo.
To open up.
Yeah.
That was fatal. Like, why do that?
I rung up all of my closest friends who are the best chefs, and they just happened to all be white. That's just the way it worked out. He didn't do it on purpose.
It just happened.
But also, that in itself could be considered an issue.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, he's just like an old fashioned. He seems to me, I'm kind of into it. He's like an old fashioned chef who wants to make money and doesn't care.
Yeah,
and he just, you know, serves fish absolutely drenched in butter, and he's making a killing, and I'm sure that restaurant will be full for years and years and years.
Okay,
and his butter will be in the supermarket.
Because I thought he was like canceled, and then he was on the cover of Arena Ohm Plus, like skateboarding on the pass, and I was like,
what,
damn, I guess this guy's good to go then.
Okay, so he's like,
okay.
That is palace.
He's basically the Shane Gillis of British cooking. He got canceled and became more famous.
How is the food?
Yeah. There's no palace deals yet for canceled food writers.
Unfortunately.
I don't know when's that coming. That's what I want to know.
I'll let you know. It's neck and neck who's going to get there.
I want to see this supreme Mario Batali, I've heard, is coming down the pipe. So I'm waiting
for
that.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
I wanted to believe.
I know. I understand.
Do I show up wearing an orange croc?
Friend of
Splash Out.
Friend of your show is Sam Hine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I had this moment the other day, sort of thinking about clothes, where I'm doing this piece about Jonathan Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interviewing Jonathan Anderson, and so they sent me to Loewe in Paris, which is not my natural environment.
Sure. The atelier is not for you normally, but this time.
Okay. And I had to go to this show, and I was like, obviously, okay, there's going to be, you know, photographers there. And I realized that I was just like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not a fashion guy. I don't have the right clothes. I don't do the thing. It's fine. So I just was like, okay, I'm just going to dress like journalist smart. Like I put on a little jumper and a tie. And I was like, I'm going to be invisible in this place. Uh-huh. And I was going so well. You know, I dodged all of the street style people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, deathly silent. I was like, I'm going to be in and out here.
Frictionless past the street style photographers as well.
No problem.
Saying. Okay.
And I sashayed past like all the weird handsome male celebrities that he'd assembled there. Okay. Like it was like Jamie Dornan.
Yes it was a murderer's row.
And then I was and so I was like, okay, I'm gonna get away with this, you know, no one's gonna see me, I'm not gonna be, you know, I'm not gonna get in any trouble,
I'm not gonna be cast in the new Dior ad, I'm home free,
in and out. And then I sit down and look up and just see that Sam Hine is like opposite me but like raised a bit. And so I'm like, oh, I'm going to be in the back of a lot of these people. and I was. And I had, so yeah, within about 10 minutes, I had these messages. I think Raven was like, you look like you've come out of a time machine. Someone else said I looked like a clock that had been reanimated.
So you went into it assuming I'm going to wear, they call them in the production world, like stage blacks.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to dress as inconspicuous as possible. They're going to take a look at me and not say or think anything.
Yeah.
And then now people are using these amazing texts and tweets to describe how odd you look.
Well, how invisible, you know, what's invisible? Exactly. Yeah. Like maybe all in black would have been better, like a guy in a puppet show or something.
Yes, exactly. You
know, or a magician's assistant. But then I feel like all in black is tough too. I thought I'd gone for like pure neutral, but then, you know, Charlie Baker, who edits The Fence, was like, you're serving Latin teacher.
Yeah, I mean, I get called when I wear a tie with jeans and a blazer, I'm often like, he thinks he's pulling off the substitute teacher, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And I'm like, no substitute teacher ever wore jeans and a Charvet tie. Fuck yourself. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just dressed as a substitute teacher, but you know, it's impossible.
Yeah, it's like a good look.
Invisibility is impossible. I don't know how you would go about that in a Loewe context.
Well, I'll sell it. Don't ask your seat to be moved away from Sanheim. The man made to wear clothes. You know,
vortex. You're gonna get sucked in.
All right, Ed. Thank you for
thank
joining
you guys.
Us.
It was a pleasure.
On How Long Gone, it was a blast, and we can read you at the Telegraph, The Fence. Anywhere else we should be checking?
Those are the big ones.
Okay. Okay.
I'll see you next time. There's a natural disaster in California, and you're in Europe. Yeah,
we're yes. Really appreciate it. We'll see you soon, man.
Okay, amazing. Thanks a lot, guys. That was fun.